Hey everyone, welcome to Savage to Sage, where we explore the evolution of entrepreneurs. In this show, we hear from leaders on the challenges and breakthroughs that have shaped them on their journey toward becoming a sage. Welcome back, everybody, to Savage to Sage. This is Daniel, the co-host, and today I have the joy of being joined by Jace Mouse. Jace is the CEO of GoDo and the founder of SoGo Meat, and also has a deep history in the startup scale-up space as an entrepreneur. And so I'm really excited to have Jace here today. Jace, welcome.
Hey, Daniel. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to chat with you today.
Yeah, for sure. So like we were joking before we hit record here, you know, GoDo is your current rodeo, yet it is not your first rodeo. You've been kind of, I'd call it like serial entrepreneur and kind of in the startup scale-up space, seen, you know, acquisitions happen over your career and been an integral part of those. So first question for you on that note of like, what is it that, you know, I know you just started at GoDo about 4 months ago, like what is it that keeps you coming back to this space and the startup space and especially in technology?
It's interesting for me, a country boy from Oklahoma, to be in tech. And really what drew me in is the opportunity to have an impact. When I discovered early stage businesses, I just realized like, wow, there were just so many places where I could just be focusing productively at any given moment. That can be its own challenge, of course, with so many things, what do you focus on? But the impact is huge. And I was really drawn to that aspect of it. The second is just the opportunity to really rally people around a common goal, and especially when it's a common good, is incredibly powerful. I think growing up in ranching, like there were always things that needed to get done, but it was a little bit hard sometimes to know beyond the family kind of what that bigger aspect is, kind of who you were helping. You never got to meet the person that you fed for dinner, right? But I love the impact of startups and just that opportunity for us to get a team focused together on a goal.
Yeah. Well, you don't hear Oklahoma country boy that grew up ranching turned tech entrepreneur. So what was it that prompt for you to leave that lifestyle to jump in the early days?
Yeah, I grew up in Oklahoma, just youngest of four boys, and grew up on working. And I think you could always tell the city kids from the farm kids, because when spring break or summer break rolled around, the city kids were super excited. And the farm kids are like, I got to go like fix fence and bale hay and do all these other things all summer long. And so we did develop a love of kind of the work ethic behind it. The other interesting thing I'll share, that I owe a lot of credit to my dad, because we were in the middle of a field one day repairing a windmill, literally 105 degrees outside. And my dad was a man of few words. He looks up, it's just me and him in there, middle of nowhere. He looks up and says, son, there's easier ways to make a living. You ought to find one. And they went right back to work. And I was like, oh, okay. And it took a while for that to sink in. But really what that was powerful about is that in that moment, my dad kind of released me from this kind of feeling, a sense of burden around that I had to kind of take this over and continue to run with it. Because it's a hard way to make a living. You work hard. You've got to watch the weather, the commodities markets, capital side of things, and just so many dimensions to it. And so I just really value him a lot. He never really circled back until far later explained, it's like, yeah, that's why I told you that. And he was someone who never used a lot of technology, but just really encouraged it for me from the earliest days.
Nice. Yes. So was that, you're not too good at this, this ranching work, or was it like, I really see that I'm just joking there, or, you know, is this, I really see a path forward for you outside of here.
Well, you know, Daniel, I never thought about it that way. I might want to rethink that or get a therapist or something now, but it really was. He would explain, he's like, hey, I see a lot of potential in you, and you know, you really like the computers and you're really good at it. And again, like he just really encouraged it in a way that was really profound. My father never went to college. He paid to put my mother through school. She's a doctor of pharmacy, but was probably far smarter than any of us, and just knew so much about so many things he just never explained. And I think for me, he just saw potential. He wants what every parent does, which is for our kids to do well in life. And I really respect him for that.
Yeah, that's awesome. A lot of times, you know, you hear entrepreneurs who I would say have like a father wound, and it's almost like they're trying to be successful because they didn't get that, you know, attunement like you're describing from your dad, who really saw you and like encouraged you in a way. And so they're trying to prove something. And typically that, I would say in my experience, that's led to like a lot of unhealthy behaviors. But for you, it just sounds like he really saw something in you and encouraged you. So man, he gave you a really good gift there.
Yeah, I agree. I look back sometimes and just, he even followed my career along the way, and he was just, he would ask questions about technology and how I was doing certain things. And he always had a kind of a arm's length kind of interest in it and just really valued that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So when you say impact and the impact that you can have, like describe what you mean by impact there, and then maybe give an example or a story of the impact that you've experienced personally.
Yeah. So I'll tell a little story of kind of early in my startup kind of journey and go back to the first business I built. I was out of college. I came to Illinois to work for State Farm Insurance, which was, in case you know, it's not a startup. and even there, I just really was, I loved the company, loved all the people, but I it makes sense now. But even then, I was actually found my way into what were called at-risk projects, which were almost like these mini salvage kind of startup kind of journeys. But fast forwarding, but it was always hard to have an impact. It's like, all right, what am I allowed to do? What am I not allowed to do? Whose job is this? And coming into from that into a company that only had less than 100 people at the time, 50, and then we grew 100 and then down to 14. But that's the next chapter of the story. But there were so many opportunities for me to be trusted with things that no one at State Farm is ever going to trust me with, right? And I remember, for example, looking at a specification we were writing for a major system we needed, and I'm looking through the table contents that exists, and I'm getting to like page like 30. I'm like, wait, these pages are like blank. There's no more. And so I was like, I should probably think about this, because we've got these consultants that are going to be doing this work. And so examples like that of just like, hey, would it be okay if I took a stab at this? And people are like, yeah. And I love that. From there, I'll kind of jump ahead. Like I shared a little bit. We kind of grew up a little bit, but we had a pretty heavy burn and the capital market shifted. And we just realized we were not, despite any traction, we're not going to get additional funding. So we took the capital we had, pivoted the business from being was originally intended to be a high-end kind of travel consultancy for adventure travel, and needed to pivot that into essentially what was a SaaS-based marketplace business. And so I stuck with the team there to grow and keep that business alive. And there were just then certainly no shortage of ways to make an impact. Everything from, you know, writing code to figuring out your sales pitch for your next partner. And for me, I learned a lot in my career, right? Because I was just getting trusted with things that I was just never going to see otherwise.
Yeah, that impact, I think, it's something that it's like a boost that keeps you going, especially in like what we call in this show, the savage days, where it's like those days where, you know, most entrepreneurs would describe it, you're working an insane amount of hours, you know, trying to get your product to market or sell or survive as a company in some seasons. And so just getting that like a dopamine boost of like, yes, like I'm making an impact. This is important. This is why I'm doing it, is fuel to an entrepreneur's fire like that. And so talk about like that for you, especially right now with GoDo. I mean, you're in the savage days with GoDo, but I know also you weren't the founder of GoDo. You recently came into leadership and, you know, took over from a previous founder leader. And so talk about like what the savage days are like right now for you and what keeps you going through that.
Sure. So first of all, I'll just share that GoDo is a solution that helps employees make the most of every dollar. And the way we do that today is we actually let employees pay themselves in between paydays. They can cover a bill. They can actually pay down interest-bearing loans faster, and a lot of interesting things with it. And so I'm fortunate, as you mentioned, to get to inherit the benefit of other people's hard work. There were other people that came before me to really pull together this kind of payroll connection with a fintech bank-backed solution. And so it's really an opportunity, a privilege for me to go and really help more employers find out about it so they can offer it to their employees. That's really what drives me and what gives me a lot of impact and purpose right now. In some ways, it's a little bit easier because I got to skip over the building season, and now I'm in the season where I get to watch actual employees via data streams kind of coming through. And I'm like, wow, that's a real person who really needed that help, who really works at that place. And that feels amazing. I joke with my team. It's like, you know, I'll just sit here all day and look at this. So and we do a little bit of that time just so I can make it. I feel like it's important for that to be real for people in terms of what we build and do. But that's the stuff that gets me really excited, that impact, and then rallying people around that common purpose. Like, the stuff we're doing, as interesting it is to us, you know, also at the end of the day, the kind of the confirmation point, this matters in the lives of people. It's a great feeling.
Yeah. So talk more about that in terms of, I know it's a topic we want to hit on today in terms of like employers nowadays having to navigate employee challenges, like, you know, the people that live paycheck to paycheck, and sometimes, like you've said, that need access to that paycheck before, you know, it's paid. And so, like, why is that important for people to think about?
Because it's something some employers naturally recognize the need for their people, but others, it's taken them longer to kind of see it. And I'll share a little bit about kind of why that is. But first, I'll just share the impacts for the employer that they see. It usually shows up in two key ways. It's how they retain employees at their company or attract new employees into the business. And the other way, and some interesting studies are just coming out about this that show the impact of people that are under financial stress and how much time at work they need to spend just dealing with the ripple effects of that stress. It's on average about 3 hours a week. And so those are the two reasons why employers are really tuned into this right now. It's like, all right, how do we get people essentially to show up at work and then to fully show up and be committed to the work they're doing when they're here? And so those are the reasons employers care. The interesting thing, I'll share a little bit more about just the types of people we help. And the first is, we've kind of touched on people that are earlier in their career or tend to be the lowest income earners. There's obvious, very real ways we can help those folks very quickly. But in the data, there's a second cluster of people we also help that's the most unexpected. It's the highest income earners. That's the second demographic most likely to be either living paycheck to paycheck or dealing with financial stress. They're dealing with stresses for very different reasons, as we kind of unpack that, right? They're generally getting married, buying houses, having babies, and none of those expenses wait for payday either. And so I love that we have a solution that's so easy for an employer to offer that even those employees can access the benefit anytime they want and avoid putting something on a credit card or taking out some other type of loan product to kind of cover those unexpected expenses. And again, I mentioned just some people really savvy can use it to actually just pay a mortgage twice a month instead of once a month. And even little tricks like that are kind of these financial hacks that we make possible. So it's interesting to be able to offer that to such a different and diverse group of people. But ultimately, always comes back to employers wanting people to be able to do their best work.
That's fascinating, because when you first told me about this, when you first started, I think we connected the first few weeks back 4 months ago. Like, I was just turning on like these use cases of the restaurant employee, or, you know, like some of our clients who have some folks that are minimum wage or just above minimum wage that are hourly, that, you know, kind of your classic people that would be fall prey to a payday loan type of scenario. But you're opening my mind here to like other use cases where, you know, I put myself in the scenarios where it's like, we have three kids, my wife works full time, I work full time, and, you know, we're going through like a home purchase right now, and we're realizing, oh my gosh, like, moving is a lot more expensive in 2024 than we remembered, you know, the last time we did this. And, you know, it's just like, you start thinking about cash flow and, okay, this contractor needs to be paid today, you know, and it's this much money. Like, so I didn't think about that use case as well.
Yeah. I thanks for sharing that. It just makes it more real, right? It's a very tangible example, and you're not alone. If we really think about it back in our life, no matter what position we're in right now, we can think back to a time where we were really scraping pittance, right? To figure it out. And for me, it was, yeah, it was buying my first home. I remember that. I was like, okay, like everyone tells you, put down as much as you can. But then I'm like doing this kind of calculus in my brain around like, well, do how much do I keep in reserve? And it's because I didn't have a solution like GoTo. If I had, State Farm is a great employer, very reliable employer. So frankly, if I'd have just known I had a rainy day fund on demand when I needed it, it would have taken even pressure off of what was ultimately one of my proudest moments as a early stage career person. So I like hearing the stories like you shared, just because it reminds us how big of an opportunity it is to help folks.
Yeah. I mean, that gets me excited too, because at Full Stack and then with my extended network, you know, we've got every type of business, you know, and so I think every type of earner, from executives who are making $300,000 a year to like frontline people who are making $15 an hour and or less in some cases. And so it's just interesting how, you know, when we think about how expensive it is to live in, you know, let's just talk the United States in 2024 due to inflation and like the increase of costs, you know, post pandemic, I think you've got something really special to offer, and to offer employers who are, you know, the most, you know, proactive, thoughtful employers that we're talking to are like thinking about every possible scenario. And my friend Jordan Peace from Fringe Benefits, I think he stated it on of like, how do we help employers are thinking, how do we help employees to live, not just to, you know, to help them when they're sick, dead, or dying. Because the like I think benefits, we've thought about this topic of employee benefits, and most of them are like, if, you know, if an employee is in a bind, you know, they're sick, so they use health insurance, or they've got someone in their family who's dying, and so they have resources for that. They, you know, there's life insurance for, you know, if you die. But like, how do we help employees live today in 2024? Like GoTo has a very specific solution for that. So that's fantastic. And I imagine you have some like stories of impact too, that you've got to experience already that are fueling your fire right now. And, you know, your first 6 months there.
I do. It's been so interesting for us. And I got to give props to the team at GoTo, because some of this was kind of here when I got here, some individuals, and we're just been amplifying it together. We get to refer to people by name. It's like, what are we going to do about this person? Or look at this case or the scenario. And it is impactful. Like, we're still at the stage of a business where we can give that really personalized attention to those cases, because most people are just kind of sailing through. But then we tend to, right now in this season, we look a lot at customer service, and we try to really understand, sometimes on limited information, what people are telling us. And I always think it's like, well, they're probably running between two jobs or two shifts, or dealing with the stresses of finding the movers, right? And that truck don't pack itself, like, you know, for you. So it's like, how do we figure out how to ask deeper questions so we really understand what the employee is trying to tell us? And I just love that we have people here that they're willing to sweat those details with me, because it does make it real.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So talk a little bit more about, in your first 6 months, I mean, at a new company, what would be like the biggest lesson that you've learned so far? Make it personal if you could, like just about yourself. I think you're kind of in the crucible where you learn a lot, maybe some new things about yourself and grow in self-awareness. And so curious, what has it been for you so far?
Sure. I'll share a couple of things that just, I think, resonate with me. It's not to burn every business and Ben, and hopefully some others as well. And the first is, we look at is, how do we make sure we're focused on things that are important, not just urgent? Because lots of stuff pops up that feels of the moment, and you can spend an entire day just reacting and never actually being proactive. And so we talk some about that as a business of sharing out. The other thing that we're doing more of, I'll share just a little bit, the tongue in cheek. I'm a dad of teens, and someone once shared a tip on how do you get your teens to talk to you. And there's lots of smarter people than me, but one bit of advice I got that was really impactful, like, okay, well, first is, don't freak out. We're like, what do you mean? When they start talking, don't freak out, because then they're going, And doing a little bit of that as someone coming into a business, it's like, hey, like, there's a reason why something doesn't work the way you think it should based on your days at Bandcamp at cars.com or Prixpod or CapEx. Like, and so just realizing that there's a journey there too. And I'm a little bit fortunate here because things are a little bit more buttoned up in some of those cases, but doing that is important. And the last thing I'll share, the third thing, is that we all know entrepreneurship is hard and it can be lonely. You deal with rejection. You deal with something worse than rejection. Sometimes it's just silence. It's like, this is a perfect solution. Your people need this. Why won't you answer the phone? And so what we've done here culturally, I've done this with the last three companies, and I'll do it for every business I'm in from here on out, is we celebrate the wins. And the way we do this at GoDo, we just start turning this on. We do team retros every week. And so we do them on Friday afternoons. And we share just basically two key questions. What are the lows of the week? And what are your highs? And that is hugely cathartic for us as a team. I started that, again, the college application business called CapEx. Then we took it to Prixpod, which was easy when I had 6 employees. It was really hard to do it 150 employees, but we found a way because it was so impactful to us to do that. So it's exciting to be able to do that here at GoDo. And I think even for an early stage part company, even if it's just you as a solo entrepreneur, just kind of working to do proof of concept, finding a partner or a friend who can just say, it's like, I'm just going to tell you a couple highs every week so I can celebrate with somebody, I think can be so valuable.
That is so true. And I'm curious, I was reading a little bit about SoGo Meet too. And is that kind of a part of why you started that as well, just to help, you know, with that loneliness piece, as well as, you know, like helping people share together?
That was an interesting kind of born out of a time, right, when we all had gotten really comfortable being insular in our own home office and just trying to encourage people to get back into kind of unexpected interactions with other people. And we all know the reasons why. Like, we were very alone, very withdrawn for a while. Then it was like, okay, we can only interact with people we really know and trust really well. And so that's some kind of muscle of survival we built, but there are other muscles to thrive that we also need to be building and exercising. And so for me, it was just this idea. It's like, let's take people who don't know each other, do a little psychological kind of matchmaking, and put them at a table for coffee or lunch. So it's a small little effort. It's mostly here in Chicago. We kind of trotted out for Chicago Ideas Week and some other places. But just born out of this idea that there's a lot of benefit of getting people together and just sharing. And we do a couple of things. We put people together and then we just ask really lighthearted, kind of funny questions just to get people chatting and interacting, something that no one can be an expert on. And so it's just been fun to kind of add that out there as a little bit. So if anybody of your listeners is looking to pick up a passion project, I'd love a partner in crime on that one.
That's good. Last week, someone asked me a question like that. I think it was, if you were to go to Arby's, like, what would be your order? You know?
Yeah.
So the first thing that came to mind, because I haven't been to Arby's in a long time, was the Big Montana. So I don't know if you remember. It was like this roast beef sandwich that was like that big, stacked with like an insane amount of meat. But yeah, I love that idea of just helping people to share life and, you know, and also just something that people can't be an expert in, because I think we all talk to those folks that, you know, are like to talk about themselves and show their expertise and not necessarily show curiosity or ask questions. And, you know, I tend to try to avoid those types of people, but like, you're onto something in terms of, I mean, entrepreneurship and leading a company is known to be like one of the loneliest things, you know, that you could do. I'm curious, like, at how you've seen that shift or evolve, like, post pandemic too, because this isn't your first rodeo. I mean, you were a founder prior to the pandemic and now you're a CEO now. Like, what's different now in terms of that, like, loneliness piece?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I've not thought about this a lot, but there is a perspective in my brain rattling around. Used to be in entrepreneurship, you saw a lot of it. You'd ask them, it's like, oh, why are you here in the same place, the same coworking space every day? And no one's ever heard of you or your business. Like, what are you doing? And they had to say, it's like, well, I'm an entrepreneur. It's hard. I'm trying. But now it's more common for entrepreneurs to go suffer in silence. And so you create this really interesting problem, right? Where you have an entrepreneur who suffers in silence, and actually even good suffering, right? The good struggle that comes before the wins, but they're doing it alone and quietly. And all they ever hear about out beyond their own little bubble are the wins other people are having, because you only hear about the success stories. And so I wonder about that, and should entrepreneurs find a way to get in community with other entrepreneurs, even when it's messy? I did that for me. I have a group of five other early growth stage HR-focused CEOs. I was like, hey, let's do this together. And I mapped it out. Like, I looked for five. I'm like, none of us compete. Like, let's go do this and talk about it. And just to create a little bit of a space where we can admit where we're struggling or where we're having challenges. Because when you're talking on a sales call to a client, there are no challenges, right? It's like, oh no, this is great. Everybody wants this product. And so it's great to have a space where you can share a little bit more about, like, either, hey, I have a great product, why is no one picking up the phone? Or, hey, someone asked me a great question I was totally unprepared for as a client, and I feel embarrassed because I feel like I should have prepared or something. And so going back to that point, like, I think there is a tendency for entrepreneurs to suffer in silence right now. And it's really important to find some way, your way, to get connected to other people who aren't always sharing just the wins. It's not always sunny with them.
So when you leave that meeting with the CEOs and you've had a chance to share that, like, talk about that experience. What's it like for you? What are you kind of processing or feeling like after that time with them?
Well, selfishly for me, I get to just tell them things I need to do to make Godin successful that I'm not great at. And so it's great to have other people be like, oh, well, let me tell you how to do this. And that's huge, right? There's something a little bit cathartic about being able to admit you're not perfect at something. And it's amazing when someone else can kind of quickly step in and share that. Or sometimes they just tell you, it's like, yeah, that's hard too. And that's okay as well. But I love just the notion, like, if I had never been willing to share I was struggling with that thing, or I was afraid that this next thing we are going to have to do, I'm not perfect at, I'd have never gotten the benefit of some other expertise. And so I think once you can get in that kind of community with other people, it can be very validating and self-reinforcing, but it's so hard to do at the outset when you're just in your own little bubble.
Yeah, I was just talking to someone who's a part of EO, which is, I think it stands for Entrepreneurs Organization, but they have these, I forget exactly what they call them, like focus groups, where essentially you're with non-competing, like, CEOs, and that they are very specific of, like, you have to be a founder, an owner, majority owner, CEO to be involved. And then they place you in groups of, like, non-competing CEOs. The testimonies I heard were just about, you know, how, like you said, I was able to share what's really going on, you know, in my life and my business. And I could do that safely and confidentially, and, like, get the support that I needed to take the next step, you know, forward to, you know, figure out a sticky situation. Or, you know, I heard stories of entrepreneurs that were sharing both, like, deep business challenges, but also deep personal challenges with their group. I think it feels like when we talk, like, on Savage to Sage, we're talking about this evolution of entrepreneurs toward what we call Sage, which is, like, you know, just the embodiment of wisdom and the way, you know, living life, leading business the way that we're meant to as humans. And I feel like there's something sage in that and what you're saying. And then, like, kind of that mission of EO is that reality, like, we're not alone. And the myth that we are alone, I think, has probably crept its way into entrepreneurship in the United States in particular, where it's like, okay, Jace, it's just you. You got to get Godin off the ground yourself. Like, it's up to you. And if you fail, it's your fault. You know, if you succeed, it's all because of you. And so it just creates, like, this pressure to, you know, to perform in a way that I don't know that we were meant to do. I think you're onto something there with just like having that support group of people that, you know, you can bounce ideas off of, as well as like, you know, share those deep challenges and receive those and help other people through them. So I'm curious how that falls on you.
Yeah, I agree. I think a couple things there. Things are never as good or as bad as they are in my head. In reality, yeah. Right? And so it's so good just to kind of be able to share that. And again, you can't just do that on repeat full time, because who wants to talk about the Jace show all day long, right? But finding a space where there is this kind of balance of sharing and back and forth, I think is incredibly valuable. And that's taken me a while. Like, again, I'm a rancher. Like I mentioned, my dad don't talk a lot. His land, he's a man of few words. Like, and that was what I was taught to be self-reliant, be strong, don't complain. Like all these things that are actually really good to be a good entrepreneur, even, like, they're really important. That self-resilience and all these other things, but they also have their downsides, right? And so how do you get a place where it's like the classic therapy thing, which is like, okay, put a word to your feeling. And I thought that was the dumbest thing ever. I was like, what? And then the reality is, like, the number of times I'm like, oh, like, I'm just something kicking around in my head. Like, I'm going to put a word on it. Like, that's a skill I probably would have paid 10 times as much for. But at the time, felt silly. Like, it didn't feel like I had time for that. I really identify a lot of what you're sharing there.
Yeah. I think I've seen more of this movement within startup world, tech world, you know, even some venture capital firms where they're basically saying, hey, like, if we're going to invest in you, we need a confirmation that you have the support that you need, both from a psychological perspective as well as like the relational perspective. And so they're thinking it's good. Like, I think people are starting to think more holistically about, you know, people like you, who a lot of venture money and board of directors are relying on, you know, to lead something toward a good return on an investment. They're realizing it's not just about Jace picking himself up by his own bootstraps, but it's like, how does Jace, like, care for his whole person? I've gotten my hand slapped in the Midwest for even saying that, because it's like, Daniel, you should, if you're going to talk like that, you just need to move out to California. But this, we don't talk like that in the Midwest, but I'm like, hey, I think California could, you know, and people that are a little bit more progressive as it relates to this could teach us all something about, you know, the holistic care of entrepreneurs that are really what helps us to keep going and to ultimately give not just good ROI from a investment standpoint, but good ROI from, like, you know, finishing well as a person and caring for our families well, you know, having a strong marriages if we're in a marriage, you know, et cetera.
If I could, I'll break in and share one bit about that. Just somebody I feel like is doing this really well and recently came in my orbit. One of our investors is TechNexus here in Chicago, and proud to have them on board. Fred Hoke actually sets a board meeting. His question is like, okay, Jace, but how are you? And I'm like, I'm good. I'm good, Fred. Let's keep moving. And, you know, and I didn't think much about it. I kind of knew he was going to ask that question because someone else had said it before. And it's funny, he asked that question. He kept moving on. He didn't push, didn't say anything. And that was it. But actually, in my world, it gave me space to come back on, you know, 5 weeks later and be like, hey, Fred, I'm still good, but I do have one thing I'm a little worried about. Would like to get your thoughts, you know? And so it does kind of create this opportunity for people who really want to have impact and get results. It creates a space, because honestly, as an investor, it's got to suck, right? Because you can't solve problems that people don't tell you. So I do think there's a wisdom in getting people to talk about their challenges, just because it then gives you access as an investor or a mentor to be able to do more there to help.
Right. But you're onto something there of like what Fred did for you, though, is he gave you permission to share that. And I think a lot of times, you know, like you said, what gets stuck in your head is, I couldn't share that with my board. I can't share that with my investors, because that would be me like playing a weakness card and cause them to question, you know, does Jace have what it takes to lead this thing toward ROI? But like Fred in my opinion, gave you permission to just to be human, and so that he could have the opportunity to support you and help you. And I think it takes people like Fred that change the tide there, because like most people in your seat relate to investors, you know, from a place of fear and maybe compliance, you know, of like, yes, here's what I'm doing and here's how I'm doing it, versus like vulnerability, you know, I would say constructive vulnerability to, you know, to get the best, you know, product and outcome for everybody. So I don't know, is that fair? Just that permission piece?
Absolutely. Makes tons of sense. I love all my investors. I never on the board, but that one definitely jumps out.
Yeah. Yeah. Good answer there. So we're at our time, and I'd like to finish out here just asking two lightning round questions and related to the topics that we've been talking about. First one is, you know, what does Jace do for that's dumb and fun just to recharge your battery? If you had an hour a day or couple hours on a weekend, like what kind of dumb or fun thing would you do to recharge your battery?
Oh gosh. Well, it's go do that's the answer, right, boss? I'm a huge sci-fi nerd. So anything, if I want to check out a little bit of lost sci-fi, I'd review our book, just gives you that space.
Nice. What's your favorite sci-fi movie or series?
Well, for my kids right now, there can only be one answer, which is Star Trek. if you don't know what Friday is, I can't tell you, but I'm enough for us. Anyway,
nice.
That's it for us. It's something, it seems like you're just always looking for things that get you connected together and you can do together. And
yeah,
I would have chosen like Cubs baseball or Bears football, but they chose Star Trek. So yeah. I'll take it.
I love that. Yeah. My son and I just finished, in January, we finished the Lord of the Rings like extended edition, which is like he's nine years old, and it was, you know, 4.5 hours a piece of like, and then we did all three of the Hobbit movies as well, and so that was a large investment, but he was just like every night, you know, especially at the holiday break in the first couple weeks of January when school was still out, it was like, hey, can we go watch some more tonight?
I knew who I'm calling for my questions about Middle Earth.
Yeah, I bet my 9-year-old would know more about that than me and retain more. So, well, I'll put him on speaker for you. So, second of all, especially because this isn't your first rodeo, and you've been in this seat and space, you know, so often over so many years, like. Think about like somebody that's stepping into entrepreneurship for the first time. It's a new founder, and probably has a good product or service idea, and is just taking the jump. Just got some funding. You know, what advice would you give to them?
The groundbreaking one for me just made a difference in my life. I told this to someone else, and it's like, hey, have an innovative solution to an important problem, and just keep doing that on repeat. So it's important for your thesis of, you know, what's the problem you're solving? Do you have a solution? Is it different and innovative? Not unique. Like, you don't have to be perfectly unique in the business, but innovative. And then how do you keep using that message, an innovative solution to an important problem, in your sales messaging, in your communications to your team? It's just a little bit of a shortcut for me in terms of how I communicate with everyone.
Yeah, that's good sage advice to finish out. And if people want to get in touch with you and learn more about GoDo after they listen today, where would you point them?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn, and godolife.com is where everything good gets started with helping people make the most of every dollar they earn. So I'd be happy to chat with you and any employers certainly that are interested in doing more for their folks. We'd love to talk.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Jace, for your time and insights today.
Thank you for listening to today's interview. To view show notes or hear more episodes, please visit www.savagetosage.com.